Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, brought to you once again by On Fire Ministries and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being a man, but in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And that's where the gospel of the kingdom comes in, Ephesians 2, 19 through 22. So then, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and are of God's household, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together is growing into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together into a dwelling or habitation of God in the Spirit. Last week or so has been pretty incredible around the world right now. And seeing a move of God like we have never seen before. And people coming to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, people getting baptized. In fact, almost every Sunday, we're baptizing folks. That is the hunger that is out there right now to know the Lord, to press into the Lord. This is not a time of compromise. And as I've said on a couple shows previously, this year is going to be the hardest on lukewarm Christians. There is a more middle ground. Whether we're talking relationship with Jesus Christ or we're talking politics or whatever, there is no more room for middle ground. Politics especially is interesting because rhinos, Republicans in name only, think that they are going to just waltz into the next office when they don't understand the righteous indignation of the American people. They don't understand how many people right now are awake and they want to do something. You know, you have county commissioners, for example, over in Kootenai County saying just absurd things like everybody's a Marxist. That's what they do. No, no, just stop acting like a Marxist. Stop adopting socialist policies and you're not a Marxist. But you got to stop doing Marxist things. You got to stop talking the Marxist talk. You got to stop compromising where people want true representation. They want government whose job is to defend our God-given, unalienable rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. That's what people want. And if you're not doing that, you're going down the road that Marx laid out in Chapter 2, the Communist Manifesto, which said abolition of private property, abolition of nations and borders, abolition of the family, abolition of truth in all religion. So you can't escape the consequences of your actions. That's why county level offices are so critical. County sheriff, county prosecutor, county commissioners. That's why it's so critical. People right now in America, they're tired of the mealy mouth, do nothing, lots of talk people. They want real Americans to stand up. They want real Americans to defend them. And so, especially here in the church, we understand this is a period, this is a time of sifting. And as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We will make the effort to press into the Lord. Not that our effort brings us anything except intimacy with the Lord, but we want to turn our attention toward him. Not like we have to do a set of things, but we want to turn our attention toward him. That's the effort I'm talking about. And when we do that, we are turned into a habitation of God in the Spirit. I talked this week about Luke chapter 5, verse 37 to 39, which talks about new wine and new wineskins. So new wineskins. We are the new wineskins, the temple of the Holy Spirit, the body of the believer. The new wine is the Holy Spirit, but there's an interesting last sentence there that says people like to drink the old wine because it is just fine or is good enough in some translations. And the point being that the old way of doing things, the status quo, that should not be ever good enough for the Christian. We should be pressing in. God is creating. He makes all things new. And that's not just something like he made all things new a long time ago. No, he continually makes all things new. And if we understand that, we want the new wine. We don't want to be stuck with the old wine and saying, oh, it's just good enough. It's just fine. And that should be our motivation right now in pressing into the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And that's where I would like to shift now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, now I've got a whole bunch of stuff here, so bear with me. I'm going to try to give you the latest information that you're not getting anywhere on the mainstream media and magazine. Sam Faddis, his article, This is How World War I Started, How Biden Stumbles Toward War with Russia. Quote, we may be on the precipice of such a catastrophe again. Joe Biden, incompetent and compromised, has no plan whatsoever for managing the building Ukraine crisis, and yet compelled, no doubt, by plummeting poll numbers and domestic political considerations, he's now pushing American forces forward into Europe and to the borders of Russia. Multiple press outlets are reporting that Biden is in the final stages of identifying American military units to be sent to Eastern Europe. As many as 50,000 troops may be involved. On Sunday, the United States ordered the families of its diplomats in the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, to leave the country due to the threat of Russian invasion. Reports that I am getting personally from on the ground in Ukraine are talking about people beginning to buy things and prepare for war to happen in that country. In addition to that, the U.S. Embassy is essentially saying, if you stay there after this now voluntary evacuation order, if you stay there, that they can't guarantee your safety to get out. It's like they're telegraphing Afghanistan again. Meanwhile, NATO said on Monday it was putting forces on standby and also reinforcing Eastern Europe with more ships and fighter jets. Reportedly, Denmark, Spain, France, and the Netherlands were all planning or considering sending troops or planes or ships to Eastern Europe, NATO said. Ukraine shares borders with four NATO countries, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania. Debkafile says this, U.S.-Russian-Ukraine tensions peak, 5,000 U.S. troops for Eastern Europe. So they're reporting that President Joe Biden has decided to send 5,000 troops, battleships, bombers, and interception planes to the Baltic region and East Europe in response to the Russian military buildup. Biden's decision came out of a top-level conference with Pentagon and military officials at Camp David on Saturday, January 22nd. All right, I want to talk about a couple things with this. First of all, a failure to fight fourth-generation warfare. Trade warfare, cyber warfare, political warfare, a failure to fight fourth-generation warfare when countries have already declared war on you, like Russia and China and Iran, and non-state actors like the Muslim Brotherhood. Refusing to fight fourth-generation warfare always ends up kinetic. And I just find it fascinating that some people are trying to simplify this so much when indeed history shows you cannot wish the wolf away from the door. I've been in a couple of conversations online with people who will say, we need a non-interventionist foreign policy. Don't you agree? Yeah, that's what George Washington advocated, and And when you do go to war, you have a full debate in Congress and you have a declaration of war. I absolutely believe that. But I asked a question back, and it was interesting, the answer, when I said, are you saying that Russia has not declared war on us already and is not already fighting fourth generation warfare against the United States? Instead of saying and admitting yes, because you have to, they went to the deep state. Said, well, don't you think the deep state's a worse threat? And don't you think that the deep state's perpetrating fourth generation warfare against the United States? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. It's the same communists. It's the same global communists. Recognize this. The globalists control the two counterstates, the communists and the jihadis. The globalists control it. But at their core, globalists are communists. You can read their own writings and the weird stuff on technocracy. And we're going to talk about this with our guest today, globalism, in depth. I think people miss this, but some of these folks that say, oh, we need a non— that's irrelevant right now. War is at our doorstep in the fourth generation context. We're not even on the battlefield yet. And it's intellectually lazy to sit there and say, oh, it's that, it's just Russia, it's just Russia. No, it's not just Russia. Probably one of the greatest fakes in world history was this so-called fall of the former Soviet Union, where they took a classic Hegelian step backwards. If you're familiar with the Hegelian dialectic from Hegel and Marx, the Hegelian dialectic says you have the positing of truth or the thesis, and kind of anti-truth or the antithesis or the antithesis. And they try to make you compromise with synthesis. This is how the Hegelian dialectic works. So they will, when they feel pressed, they will always take a step backwards. That's why you don't see Antifa riots everywhere right now. They've taken a step backwards. Antifa is engaged in intelligence gathering and trying to map groups and trying to recruit right now and train their people. They've taken a step backwards because it got too hot for them. This is why you see these weird plans that came out of the Cold War, like invading Norway and invading South Korea at the same time, and then giving up Norway and saying, okay, you guys can have Norway back, but not South Korea. This is all revolving around this idea of the Hegelian dialectic, where essentially you have a Hobson's choice of compromise. In other words, you don't really have a choice at all. The only way to fight the Hegelian dialectic is through what is called classical synthesis, or standing on the truth, not moving one inch off of the truth. And the truth is, right now, we have globalists controlling the two counterstates, communism and Islam, through jihadis and communists, trying to take down this country. And the big picture is this. There is no reason right now we should be at all constricting our own supply chains. And yet that's exactly what's happening. I'm going to get to that here in just a second. No reason, unless you're trying to weaken the United States prior to a war. So yes, I agree with this idea that we should have a non-interventionist foreign policy, but that presumes that nobody's declared war on us. When in fact, right now, the Russians and the Chinese, the Iranians and the Muslim Brotherhood have declared war on the United States of America. We need to take the battlefield in fourth generation war so that we don't have to take the actual battlefield someday. That doesn't mean I'm pro-war, by the way. For those of us who are combat veterans, we never want to see that anywhere close to America, let alone anywhere else in the world. And that brings me now to the next thing on the international front. So we have the Chinese and the Russians right now in economic free fall in certain instances. I want to qualify this. So right now, the Russian stock market, the ruble, is taking a beating right now, which when a country feels like their economy is being crushed and their military is mobilized, it's not a good combination because they feel like they need to go to war to protect their economy, but more importantly, protect those who are in power. The Chinese actually wrote about this. General Chiwatian's secret speech, unrestricted warfare, this idea that if the Communist Party was ever truly threatened, the Chinese would go to war to protect it. Well, coming to us from Technocracy News, China's technocrat builders create equivalent of 27, hear this right now, 27 empty New York cities. This is why their real estate company Evergrande is in a free fall right now, getting restructured, and their real estate markets are in a free fall right now. This is going to affect other areas of the economy. So now you have China also with a whole bunch of firstborn males without the ability to really marry wives because there aren't enough ladies, and an economic downturn, and their military poised to invade Taiwan. You can see this being set up. So, what do we do as Americans? First of all, we need to pray and ask the Lord, what do you want to say? What is your priority, Lord God, for today? Instead of worrying about things, ask the Lord, what do you want me to do? And then do that in this time. Be aware of what's going on, but do that. Don't get weighed down by it, but do what the Lord's calling you to do. Which brings us now on the international front to, I think, one of the funniest articles out there, Travis. I really do. It's from the National Pulse. Oppressive COVID measures for the unvaccinated were based on, wait for it, a software error, claims German minister. The pandemic of the unvaccinated was caused by a computer glitch. That was the conclusion of the health minister of Germany, Karl Lauterbach. After months of vilifying the unvaccinated in the nation's second largest city, Hamburg. We used to have my dog ate it. Now it's, Travis, my computer crashed. Sorry about that whole COVID mandate thing. I apologize for that. But it's this Microsoft program. I don't know what happened. This Google crashed. You can't make this up. They literally don't know what to do now, trying to end COVID. So COVID's going to end here, you know, March, April timeframe. Their plan is to try to replace that with war as the economies turn down. So they don't even know really what to do. They're walking back all the statistics now, and they're doing all this stuff. Oh, so sorry. We were off by tens of thousands. Our bad. Anyway, next thing. The only way this stops is if we can begin to hold these kind of people accountable. They should be in jail. They should be put on trial and sent to jail for this stuff. This was not an accident. Which brings us now to the, I love this, OSHA. OSHA formally withdraws Biden vaccine mandate. Oops, we're just going to go ahead and take that back. Sorry about that, guys. Sorry about that, all you businesses that suffered. Really apologize about that, but we're just going to take that back now. Meanwhile, the truth continues to come out, coming to us from the Liberty Daily via Readout News. Bombshell cover-up, cancer diagnosis in the military rose over threefold since jabs were introduced. Yesterday's COVID-19, a second opinion panel hosted in Washington, D.C. by Senator Ron Johnson. By the way, Senator Ron Johnson is becoming a hero. He's actually doing something instead of talking about it. He held essentially in an investigative hearing, despite all the other stuff, brought experts in so they could be put on the record. Doctors from across the spectrum spoke up about what they're seeing on the ground, while other expert panelists exposed damning data demonstrating not only a huge medical problem, but also a coordinated cover-up of the evil deeds being perpetrated by members of our own government. Wow. Okay, so I want you to listen to this part of it. Conservative commentator Daniel Horowitz from The Blaze posted a follow-up bombshell of information he received from one of the panelists, attorney Thomas Renz. I can share with you from attorney Thomas Renz that the number of cancer diagnoses in the military system went from a five-year average of 38,700 per year to 114,645 in the first 11 months of 2021. This is a predominantly young population, he continues. Unlike VAERS, where the naysayers can suggest that anyone can submit, this is only military doctors and quantifies every single ICD code in the military for TRICARE billing. So that you can't get around this as clear evidence that something is wrong, something's going on. I'm going to go ahead and post that up online here later too. But now we also get more data. This coming to us from WorldNet Daily. Government data show vax-free less likely to get COVID. Rate of infection more than twice as high for vaccinated people. Data released by the Scottish government show people who have been vaccinated with two or three doses of COVID-19 mRNA vaccines are more likely to become infected, be hospitalized, or die than people who are unvaccinated. Public health data from Scotland over the last 4 weeks showed a rate of infection of 866 per 100,000 people for the double vaccinated and 481 per 100,000 for the boosted or triple vaccinated. The unvaccinated had a rate of infection of 413 per 100,000. The death rate of those who had two shots is about 12 per 100,000, which is more than 50% higher than the rate for unvaccinated. So again, raising gigantic questions. What's going on here in the world? And these are just the facts. The facts for your friends and family. All right. Shifting now to the national front. And I want to talk about this and take a little bit of time on this. There, again, is no reason we should be constricting our own supply chains. China is closing ports. The Canadians are implementing policies that are choking supply chains both to the United States and from the United States to Canada. But now, Biden is banning unvaxxed truckers from the U.S., exacerbating the supply chain. And here's the interesting part about this. The Canadians rely on us for food. Not totally food. The Biden White House is requiring all non-U.S. citizens, including Mexican and Canadian truck drivers, to show proof of COVID-19 vaccination in order to enter the country via all land ports, which exacerbates the supply chain issues in the United States. Why would you do that? Then you have a union, and this coming to us from Gateway Pundit, now the BNSF, we can pull that article up, now the BNSF Railroad prepares to go on strike, adding to challenges and filling already empty shelves in U.S. stores. So now you've got the shipping being affected by the ports being closed or the green restrictions in California where truckers can't meet the standards, so they can't go to the ports, so they have a backlog because they don't have enough trucks. So you have the shipping constricted, the trucking constricted. Now they want to constrict rail? This very clearly shows intentionality in artificially but intentionally creating a supply chain crisis in the United States of America, weakening us, again, prior to their planned war. To add to this, the last article I'm going to talk about today, Coming to us from American Greatness, the Civil War PSYOP. Psychological operations can have many objectives, demoralization being the most common. So right now, you're hearing the media talk all about civil war. January 6th was a coup, civil war, civil war, civil war. What they're trying to do is divide us right now because a divided house is a weaker house, which makes us more vulnerable. This new narrative in the media of a civil war is meant to weaken us as a country, is meant to demoralize us as a country. And candidly, part of their end goal, I think, is to balkanize the United States. Some of that may actually happen because the cities have been taken over in large part by actual Marxists. Folks that live in the country, as Thomas Jefferson said, those closest to the land retain the values that make a country great. And it's a paraphrase, by the way. You can read about his quote if you type in yeoman farmer. But what he's saying is that those in the country, those that are closest to the life and death cycle, closest to the land, preserve the values that make a nation great. And so they're trying to exacerbate that divide so that the country falls apart. And what's really interesting to me is the people in downtown Seattle don't realize yet where their food comes from. But what also I think a lot of people are missing is that that fourth generation warfare that we were talking about earlier is not just coming after us as a country from outside, but it is coming to us from inside. And it's time we recognize that we're on a battlefield and we fight back to preserve this great republic. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. If you get the chance, go to at Matt Shea on Gab, Getter, Parler, MeWe, all those. We're also on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. And you can listen to us across the entire American Christian Network every Tuesday and Thursday, 4 to 5, and the repeat at 9 to 10. I want to highlight an event coming up this week. Dr. Emmanuel Ziga is going to be here in Spokane down at the Davenport Grand. If you'd like more information on that, you can go to the On Fire Ministries website, check out the calendar, and register. Dr. Ziga is fantastic. I've known him for a while now, and I've been with him through a couple of things that are just amazing that the Lord has really moved. So if you've never been to an Emmanuel Ziga conference, I strongly urge you to check it out. It starts this Thursday, the 27th in the evening, then continues Friday and Saturday. All right, it is my honor right now to bring on, and I hope he's connected now, Carl Tsykrib. He is, I'm going to read this because most of our listeners have never heard about you, unfortunately, until now. We were changing that right now, but he is a Canadian-based researcher, a writer, a lecturer focusing on the paradigm shift sweeping the Western world. Let's just read globalism there. And he's attended a number of internationally significant political, religious, and social events, which we're going to start talking about here in a second. And he's seen firsthand what the globalists, and I would argue their satanic minions, want to do coming up here in this world. His book, Game of Gods, The Temple of Man in the Age of Reenchantment, was released in October 2018. Carl, it's great to have you on the show finally, and welcome. And I hope that you can really launch into what's going on with the globalists and especially some of these events that you've attended recently.
Matt, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me on your program. And yes, we sure live in very interesting, disturbing, and at the same time, exciting times as we see so many things happening across so many different fronts. And yes, the globalists are moving and have always been moving to look at securing their agenda. Yet at the same time, Matt, I'm from Canada, as you mentioned. I'm excited about what's happening today in my country as we have miles and miles and miles of trucks and convoy converging on my capital city of Ottawa to make a statement, we're done with it, which is real, where things end up going when you're pushed to a wall. And honestly, this has been a global agenda, and this has been a global movement. And now there are people who are saying enough is enough.
I think a lot of folks didn't think it would ever get to this point, but now that they realize, yeah, this is real, we're seeing an awakening like we've never seen before here in America as well. People are standing up and finally saying enough is enough by the thousands. And that's what needs to happen to stand against these globals, because the candid analysis of this is there are more of us than there are of them.
Correct. And you know, one of the things about us, the average person, the regular person, we work, we engage in activities, we're engaged in a day-to-day lifestyle where we are working, we come home, we kind of keep our noses to ourselves, we help out our neighbors, but we don't seek to instill a larger agenda. We don't have some plan to manage the world. But that's not the case when it comes to globalization, because globalization is about management. It is about not having your nose stuck where it should, but putting your nose in places it doesn't belong, and instilling global plans, global procedures, putting in policies, bringing lobby groups in line with globalist agendas, and then taking that and putting it into the national arena, at the state level, at the county, city level. And all of a sudden you realize that everybody is saying the same thing, whether it's a prime minister or your president, or whether it's a central banker, or whether it's a special interest group. They're all using the same language. They're saying the same thing because they are working towards a similar-minded agenda. It's a similar-minded management agenda. And that's the thing I think a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their heads around. This is a system that seeks management, governance through management. And so last week was the World Economic Forum, okay? It was virtually held. They were planning initially to have it as an in-person gathering, but because of threats, they decided to do it on a virtual platform, which was great for me because I was able to plug into it, and I monitored it all in real time for 5 days straight. And what comes out over and over again, Matt, is that we need to manage the world, and we will do it by digitizing everything. It will all be based around a technocratic, technological, technology, digital-based system that will ensure that our behaviors align with the new global principles, and that national governments change policies to making sure that they are aligned with global ideals. And the big one is global governance, specifically on the around the green agenda.
So let's talk about this. Why are they doing the green agenda still? I thought that was long gone and with COVID, but clearly it's not. I mean, clearly they're always going to bring it back. Yeah.
Oh, that's the staying agenda, Matt. That's the staying agenda. COVID will come and COVID will go. Even though they do recognize, yes, we're going to keep on, dealing with this for the years to come. And yes, every year you're going to have to get new shots. And that came out at the World Economic Forum. It's not over, but the one steady factor is we need to do this for the betterment of the planet. We need to do this for the greening of our planet. And they completely recognize that the only way forward to do this is to have technology lead the way, technology in line with sustainable development goals. And then attach that to things like even right down to the nitty-gritty of accounting. So the World Economic Forum has been pushing their what's called ESG standards, environment, social, and governance standards. So we've gone from lofty, grand agendas, the abstract world of where there's talking points, down all the way to the area of auditing, the issuance of an accounting system. So does your company, does your corporation work within the ESG standards, environmental, sustainable, and governance standards? Do you have a climate mitigation policy in place? Do you have diversity represented on your board of directors? Are you putting money towards social causes that would further you know, different agendas, specifically different globalist agendas. And if you're not doing that, then you're not going to get your ESG rating. If you don't get your ESG rating, well, now you're not going to be you will no longer have access to certain markets, licensing, or to supply chains. That's where it goes. So it goes from the grand idea, from the abstract, down right to action on the ground.
So at the World Economic Forum, they have, Klaus Schwab has brought up some very alarming things. Shouldn't be surprising, but they're alarming things. What is their actual end goal? What do they want to do? And let's just talk straight about that. Sure. Where are they headed with all this?
It's a form of technologically controlled system of global governance, global management. You know, the very beginning of the World Economic Forum, it didn't start off as the World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab didn't start it off that way. He called it the European Management Forum. And the management aspect has never gone away. This is global governance, but it is technologically managed. It is managed through a global public-private partnership. And that's so important for people to recognize. This is not a public-private partnership where, let's say, the state says we need to build some bridges and hires private contractors to do it. It's not that. This is global corporations agreeing with, in principle and in behavior, with the United Nations, with the World Economic Forum, with the IMF and other international actors, and then saying we agree in principle and we agree in behavior with these goals, these globalist goals, and we will work together with these entities to see them happen. That includes the financial sector, the banking sector, the transportation and the energy sector. I give Klaus Schwab credit in that he has created an ecosystem. It's not just simply a network, but it's an ecosystem of like-minded organizations, the CEOs from literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of the world's top corporations working hand in glove with the heads of state, central bankers, and some of the largest investment firms on the planet with a common agenda. So this is not something that's fly by night. This is not something that's small. This is not a state or, in my case, a provincial level matter. This is international in scope, and it has an incredible amount of influence. I mean, my goodness, my prime minister is an internationalist, and his deputy prime minister, Freeland, she sits on the board. I'm on the management board at the World Economic Forum. She's also a minister of finance. I look at your own president and Biden, friends with Klaus Schwab, has had a lot of interaction at the World Economic Forum. They're all playing by the same rule book.
They are playing by the same rule book, and they seem to have the same vision of the future. If you could be kind of specific, what does this mean for people's lives? I mean, what do they envision people doing in their daily lives, and how would they be controlled in their daily lives? What specifically do these guys want to implement to make this happen?
Well, number one, we all deal with smart technology now. We either have smartphones or we have our automobiles are all hooked up and connected. So the concept of having a smart grid where your behavior is monitored and tracked, where your travel becomes something that can be analyzed, it can be audited, where your purchasing behavior, your spending now can be analyze the seed. Does it align with global values? Does it align with saving the planet? Does it align with sustainable development goals? And then begin to change those behaviors by, you could say, either restricting access or by creating incentives to do other things or disincentives. You know, at the World Economic Forum, the Prime Minister of Japan was quite clear in saying, this is about changing individual behavior. This is about modifying individuals' behaviors. And so when you take a look at how things will become digitized, it is recognized that we can create a web. We can create a monitoring web. We can create a web, literally a global web, and we already have that, to be able to make sure that we are all on the same page in terms of our global allegiance.
Right, and you can't buy or sell unless you're part of the club, right? You mean you you have to follow the strictures and you follow the belief systems and have to prove that you actually believe the way they do.
Well, it's a type of a social credit system. And I think there's a reason why last week's World Economic Forum, the opening statements were brought about by President of the People's Republic of China. Xi Jinping was the first speaker and talked about how we all have to work together. We can't see ourselves as individual ships on the sea of the world, but together we can be one big ship. We can weather the storm. He talked about how we need to create we need to adhere to the United Nations Agenda for Sustainable Development, work for international cooperation on climate change, all the same stuff that everybody else says. But he also acknowledged how the Communist Party of China is marching on a new agenda now, and that they have full confidence that they can keep working forwards to this. So, hey, you have the president of China giving the opening address to the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, giving it a big thumbs up. And throughout the entire event, you walked away going, I think I'm just hearing China being repackaged with its technocratic social credit system.
Which brings it, the next thing up, and that's beliefs, right? Because they really want to, they want you to prove you believe that way. I mean, back when the Chinese communists first took over, under Mao Zedong, when they had the shaming sessions trying to make people, believe, even if they really didn't believe, but publicly be shamed and believe the way that they believe. So this really kind of begs the question about one world religion and kind of where they're headed with some of this. You've attended some pretty interesting conferences, world conferences on this subject. If you could enlighten the listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. I've attended the Parliament of World Religions. I attended the 2015 Parliament, the 2018 event, and then this last year they had it virtual, and so I attended that as well. And I've attended a number of other interfaith, international interfaith events, because there was a very important point where religion comes into play. And here, Matt, it's important for people to realize that what's being said at these events mirrors what is being said at the United Nations, what is being said at the World Economic Forum, and there's a reason for it. It's understood that if religious leaders can come on board and be partakers at the global table, the constituency underneath those religious leaders, their members, their denominations, their seminaries, will have tremendous, tremendous political and cultural clout as they seek to reshape the world basically in their own image. So I'll give you an example. In 2010, I was at the World Religion Summit. Now, the World Religion Summit is an interfaith parallel to the G8. So while the G8 mm-hmm. was meeting that year in Toronto, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, you had world religious leaders meeting to develop policies and recommendations and then take that to the political leaders. And it was said to everybody who was there, including myself as an observer, that the size of some of the world's religions is larger than most national governments. And so if we can bring religions on board, we have the ability to literally create a global shift. And it was no surprise that at that event and so many of the others, in fact, actually, if I'm honest, all the others that I have attended, all point to the idea that we need global governance and it needs to be the United Nations or something else effective, more effective than the UN. So it's the same playbook, but it comes from a religious perspective. For myself, Matt, I'm a Christian. And I see this in sometimes a little bit different light than some of my secular counterparts. This is really a messianic claim. This is really an alternative salvation message. That's what globalization is. It says man will create heaven on earth, and we will do it in our collective ideal. It is a salvation, messianic, redemptive claim. Whereas Jesus Christ is, no, I am the creator, and I have my plan, and my plan will move forward, and it will succeed.
Yeah.
And we're at war with that. It's a Romans 1 world where we serve the creation and not the creator. I see this as literally as fundamental as that, that globalization is an alternative salvation claim to what Christ is presenting.
Islam, Wicca, talk a little bit about how that would interface, because a lot of people would think, oh, those never would be a part of something like that, and yet actually they're kind of some of the primary drivers.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, Islam. First of all, the Sufi side of Islam walks hand in step with this in many ways, because the Sufi side of Islam sees things as a system of oneness, universalism. But what's interesting is when you attend the Parliament of World Religions or other major interfaith events, you see Islamic leaders. They're all there, too. They're at the same table. Now, they may have a different agenda, but they're all speaking and playing with the same ideas. It's no different. In terms of Wicca and paganism, yes, there's a lot of pagan representation. In fact, the 1993 Parliament of the World Religions was the first place where paganism was given really an international platform and allowed to kind of stand up as a religious movement of equal validity. And you can't pull this apart. You can't separate it. It is all part of the same process, the same intellectual, spiritual process. I'm not sure where your audience all stands in terms of where they, you know, where they go to church, but I'll give you just one example of how paganism has. One of the workshops I attended. This is at the 2015 Parliament. That year was the same year that Pope Francis released his encyclical on the environment. So I went to a workshop on a pagan workshop run by Wiccans, run by witches, on a pagan examination of Pope Francis' encyclical. And they read sections from his encyclical, and they read sections from a pagan declaration on the environment. And they didn't say which came from which. And they asked the question, does anybody here know who wrote what? Nobody could say. And that was the point. It all sounded the same.
Wow.
It all sounded the same. And so what I'm seeing here, Matt, is that we are entering an age of pagan politics, where we say our focus and our allegiance is to the earth, which is literally our focus and allegiance is to a Romans 1, we bow our knees to creation. And so we have engaged now in pagan politics. We could take it one step further and with the World Economic Forum say we are moving into an era of techno-pagan politics.
Mm. That's true. That right there is that is the summation of a techno-pagan politics. And they've been, it's not like this is just an accident or they're kind of going with the flow. This is very intentional, very planned. And before we run out of time, I'd like you to touch on a little bit the Millennium Forum. What is that? How does this play into all of it? And again, what can we expect here in the next couple of years?
Well, the United Nations Millennium Forum was one of the millennial events in the year 2000. I attended it. I have a section in my book about what transpired at that forum. It was a gathering of global-minded NGOs. I was a fly on the wall. I've been brought in as an independent expert, and there's a backstory to the whole thing, and I write about it in my book, Game of Gods. But, you know, what I find interesting is what we were discussing, because I was part of a subgroup then on restructuring world order. And what was being described and discussed back in the year 2000, I'm now seeing come to fruition. So one of the ideas that was being kicked around during the Millennium Forum, and specifically in the subgroup I was a part of, is that what we need is carbon credits and carbon pricing. And when I'm filling up at the gas pumps in my country, and I know that I have a certain percentage of what I'm spending now goes to carbon credits, mm-hmm. For me, there's a bitter irony in all of this because I know where that came from. It moved from the realm of abstract international talk, what we all seem to ignore because it sounds so much like a blah, 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 gobbledygook, but it moves from that level. Eventually, it moves all the way down to my pocketbook. And we're going to see more of that movement. Indeed, as we see companies looking to comply with ESG standards and sustainable development goals and carbon pricing, and the list goes on and on. And you're going to see more of those abstract ideas moving into the realm of politics and policies specifically, and then down to your pocketbook, and the purpose being to change your behavior.
Yeah, here in Washington State, we're seeing some just egregious things that 8 years ago I was fighting in the legislature. People didn't believe me. I was like, this is where this is headed. They're going to do this. And now, sure enough, they're introducing the bills to do exactly what we talked about 8 years ago. And it just seems so far away to people and so outrageous to people. But yet here we are. So the question then becomes, what can people do about this? How can we fight back?
Well, Matt, I think part of having a program like yours is to engage in the what to do. What to do, number one, is to understand, to have yourself informed. We've had our heads in the sand for so long, even with COVID upon us and all the restrictions and the regulations and the attack to freedom that's come with that. I'm still surprised how many people have their heads in the sand. So part of our goal, I think, is to pull people's heads out of the sand, to demonstrate, look, wake up. Take a look around. What's happening? When you have your head in the sand, not only do you not see the enemy, you don't know how close or how far he is, but your bottom end is exposed, and it will get kicked, and it is getting kicked. So that's a big one. Have a solid understanding, and understand what this is. That this is indeed, literally, a form of counter salvation message given by the world. Then number two. Wherever you find yourself engaged, if you're a homemaker, if you're a small business owner, if you're involved in politics as you yourself once was, or if you're in the realm of finances and high business, wherever your feet are, you are to be a truth teller. You are to be able to see what's happening and then speak truth into it and warn the rest of us about what you see coming down the pike as well, because there's going to be things that I'm not going to be able to see, or that you can't see, but it is still relevant and still coming. And so those are just two things. And I think as we become truth tellers to what globalization actually is, we have the opportunity then to speak truth about what is truly important.
Amen. In the last couple of minutes that we have left, if you could tell listeners where they can go find out more information about you and also where they can get your book.
You can go to gameofgods.ca. That's my book's webpage. You can read excerpts, look at the bibliography, gameofgods.ca. The other thing you can do is I used to have a magazine, an online intelligence-based publication I ran for 9 years. All of my back issues are free. You just have to sign up, and you can have access to literally dozens and dozens and dozens of PDFs of the back issues of our reports. And that's at forcingchange.org. Forcingchange.org, because this is about trying to understand those forces of change.
So, Carl, in the last minute that we have left, you know, I think a lot of people have written off the next generation, but yet I found the next generation very hungry for truth. And so what would be your message to the youth out there that are looking at all this and they've really kind of been indoctrinated into socialism to some extent? And they just want to know where the truth is. What should we believe?
Oh, my goodness. If you're a young person, and I teach a college-level course on secular pagan trends, and young people are hungry to know. And so I would definitely recommend seek out wisdom. If you're a Christian, specifically, seek out wisdom. Look for those men and women around you who can build into your life. The other thing that we all need to do is to find encouragement. And I don't mean self-affirmation or feeling good about oneself. That's not what encouragement means. The main word in encouragement is courage. So build each other up in courage and walk forward in courage, being bold, being sure, being steady and unmoved, recognizing as Christians that we serve the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Why are we afraid?
Amen. That's a great note to end on. Why are we afraid? We should never be afraid. We should walk in boldness and truth everywhere that we go. Carl, thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Blessings to you. Keep up the fight.
Hey, thank you, Matt.
All right, everybody. Carl Tykrib, you can go to forcingchange.org, forcingchange.org. Also, check out his book as well. I was reading through chapter 11 yesterday, and Game of Gods, The Temple of Man, and the Age of Reenchantment talks about the history, what he personally witnessed at these high levels. They don't expect anybody to just believe it. They're very open. They're very public about it, but they don't expect people, average people, to believe it. And yet this is exactly where they're headed. We've seen it through COVID. It woke a lot of people up. And now some of the other control mechanisms they're talking about, like you can't buy or sell anything unless you have a passport, for example, waking more and more people up. I know we're seeing Europe back off of this right now, but this is that Hegelian step backward. They're taking a step backward. There's too much heat. They're going to wait until people go to sleep again, and then they're going to start pushing forward. It's the way it always happens. I saw it happen in the legislature over and over and over again. You can look at it through history, especially modern history, how the Soviets tried to master that idea, how Mao Zedong tried to master that idea of taking a step backward when they had too much heat, waiting till people go to sleep, and then pushing back forward. For us, this should be a motivation. This should be a war cry to stand up now and do it effectively. Not everything that we do out there is effective, but do the effective things. Organize locally. Prepare locally. Begin at the local level to defend the republic. I believe that this generation is going to be remembered for standing up in the hour of uttermost need. This is Matt Shea. Thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one. Keep up the fight.